Good morning. Welcome. Good afternoon, I should say. And welcome to another edition of Open Air, KLW's regular weekly presentation of things artistic around the Bay Area, of all kinds of arts, performing arts, theater arts, musical arts, and everything else. We're very excited. We're going to talk about a performance of William Shakespeare in The Tenderloin. We're going to talk about how to make a deal with a dragon. We're also going to hear about one of the great unsung heroes of cinema, and we will also be able to enjoy some music by a really awesome musician live here in the studio here on Open Air. Welcoming you to the KLW microphones. Good afternoon, Joshua Tasman.
Good afternoon.
He's got this beautiful guitar in hand, and what I'd like to ask you to do is just launch into a song, and then we'll talk some more about the show that you're doing.
Okay, sounds good. Square foot question looms above me, a mountain cloaked in shadow. I'm waiting for its answer from the sunlight of dawn. The morning haze is drifting down the valley. Watch the day unfold. Oh, the sky is slowly brightening like molten gold. Then I see the sun rise like honey dripping down the mountainside. Birds come into life and the world turns and the sunlight burns and it tastes like honey dripping down the mountainside. The valley smiles as if it's kissed by morning, with rocks like golden teeth. Yeah. A thousand eyes and camera clicks could never make me see a thousand years of history. My face is warm with sunlight. I have to shield my eyes. This moment is carved into my mind. Then I see the sun rise like honey dripping down the mountainside. Birds come into life and the world turns and the sunlight burns and it tastes like honey dripping down the mountainside. Honey dripping down. Who says they're not to last? Who says they're just the past? Who's got the right to say what's right? I answer the mysteries of this mountain that knows everything. Time is its memory. For thousands of years it's seen the sun rise like honey dripping down the mountainside. Birds come into life and the world turns and the sunlight burns and it tastes like honey dripping down the mountainside. Down the mountainside. Down the mountainside. Ooh.
Joshua Tasman, live here in the KLW studio, playing this beautiful guitar, Taylor.
Yeah.
Was that like an old song, or was that an original?
That's an original, yeah.
Where did you get the imagery for the honey dripping down the mountainside?
Yeah, so that was from, I wrote that about a sunrise in Peru. I went on a trip to Peru, and it was, woke up at 5, got on a tour bus, and went up to Machu Picchu, and just a breathtaking valley that you're looking in from a mountain. And it was kind of cold, and the sun just kind of came up and stabbed the top of the opposite peak with just this really intense golden light. And then it slowly, just as it rose, it started just dripping. And
wow.
That was just the image that came to me.
I hear that. I see that. Now I see. Because I've always known of a singing group called Sweet Honey and the Rock, and I've wondered where did they get that imagery from. And I wonder if that's floating around in the great folk wisdom, the great folklore. Mm. So you got a show coming up, and I understand besides playing this guitar, you also play piano.
I do.
Okay. And are you are these the songs that you're going to be giving on the show is going to be Sunday the 3rd of April. It's an afternoon show, 4:30 at the California Jazz Conservatory on Addison Street in Berkeley. Are you going to be doing originals? Are you going to be doing standards? Are you going to be doing both?
I'm going to be doing mostly originals. Mm-hmm. So it's a release concert for my EP that I'm releasing that same day called Jump. So I'm going to be performing the songs from that. And the song I played just now was the opener for that record. It's called Honey. So I'm going to be playing a lot of my originals, some new ones I just wrote this January, and I'm also going to be throwing in a couple jazz standards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to, at the risk of embarrassing you, you can't really tell from listening on the radio, but can I, and I was always told that this was a rude question to ask, can I ask how old you are?
Yes, I'm 17 years old. Okay. Right now I'm a junior in high school.
Really? So we got to get you out of here because you got a class to go to.
Yeah, right.
So how is it being a 17-year-old and having all this great talent and writing all these songs that sound like you're an old grizzled songwriter, like you've seen a lot of life? How did that come to you?
Well, it's always been a bit of a part of me, I guess. I've always loved jazz music, so I've listened to a lot of, you know, music that's 100 years old by now, and I actually grew up listening to that. You know, my parents would play me all kinds of music, you know, Beethoven, Coltrane. So growing up, I had a lot of exposure to just everything. And I've always just enjoyed thinking about the, you know, big questions and using music to express those. I guess it's a part of my DNA, you know.
That makes a lot of sense. When did you put your hands on your first instrument and say, I want to play this?
I mean, I guess my first instrument was my voice. I just sang around the house when I was about 3 years old, and I used to make xylophones too out of sticks whenever we went to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I've definitely always been interested in making music.
Okay. So you play piano, you play... Is there anything you don't play? You play guitar?
I've never played the saxophone.
Okay, well... but it's interesting. You've shared the stage with one of the great saxophone players and the son of one of the great saxophone players. You've been doing this for a while, even to the point where you've opened for Ravi Coltrane as well. So you've been doing this for a little while.
I have. I mean, I got interested in jazz music in middle school in sixth grade. Really seriously started taking piano lessons and writing songs and singing. My music teacher took me on the road with him. We went to St. Louis with I think a sextet that he put together, and I got to be kind of an artist that came and did a couple songs, and it was great.
Our guest is Joshua Tasman. He has a brand new EP, that is to say a 5-song CD of original songs called Jump. And the celebration of the release of this recording is happening on Sunday, the 3rd of April. Time is 4:30 in the afternoon. The place is the California Jazz Conservatory. The address for that is 2087 Addison Street in Berkeley. Will you be playing solo or will you be there with a band?
I will be joined by some really fantastic musicians, actually. So I'm working with Lori Antonioli, who is the chair of the vocal department at the California Jazz Conservatory. She helped me put together a band of really some Bay Area greats. I have Dave McNabb on guitar, Dazon Claiborne on drums, and Aaron Germain on bass. And there's some, you know, really seasoned pros that I got to, you know, play my originals and...
Well, you're becoming a seasoned pro, and I'm enjoying hearing this story. When were you starting to play professionally or semi-professionally to the point where people said, check this guy out, not just... Oh.
I mean, it's hard to put a date on it. I would say that in high school, mm-hmm. I started really going for it, you might say, really pursuing shows. But it's definitely been a slow process, you know. Getting my website together. I mean, starting out is always just there's so much new territory that I, you know, every day is like discovering something new about, you know, either being in the music business. I mean, this is my first radio interview too. I would say that I'm still kind of growing into, you know, who I'm going to be, I guess.
Keep going. I want to say keep going. And without sounding self-indulgent, I was a bit of a 17-year-old prodigy, too. I was on the radio when I was 16, and my voice had changed. Wow. But there was a certain amount of patting on the head, and isn't it brilliant? So I want to let you know to be prepared for that moment when they stop patting you on the head and saying, yeah. And are you ready for that? Or did you hear advice like that?
You know, I think I am.
Okay.
I've definitely experienced a lot of head pats, and it's great. It's great. I mean, I'm not complaining at all. But I think I'm ready. I feel like I'm ready to take a step and start kind of being in the world as an adult, you know.
Welcome.
Starting to.
Well, because you're writing songs that sound like, wow, this guy's really, really lived through a lot or really has experienced something. So you have that insight that a lot of young songwriters, the really special ones, just blow their audience away. So more power to you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Joshua Tasman, our guest here on Open Air. He has a brand new CD. It is called Jump, and the celebration of this extended play CD, that is a CD with 5 songs on it, and they're all fantastic compositions. The celebration for this will be Sunday, the 3rd of April, the time 4:30. California Jazz Conservatory is the place. The address is 2087 Addison Street in Berkeley. They're asking for admission at the door, and it's not just you playing guitar. And are you playing guitar and piano as well?
I am, yeah.
Okay, and as well as a proper 4-piece quartet backing you up there.
Yeah, well, me and a trio.
You and a trio. Then you make up the quartet.
Right.
But this is exciting. And
it's super exciting.
Best of luck to you, Joshua. Do you have a website people can go to?
I do, yes. www.joshuatasman.com. That's T-A-Z-M-A-N.
Okay. What's going on in the song About to Cry, which I'm about to play?
About to Cry, I wrote it about an early relationship I had that was... it's kind of about the intrigue of when you know that there's more to somebody than meets the eye.
Yeah, I've had that.
Yeah.
Joshua, thank you so much, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Joshua Tasman with a Z. Thank you.
eyes look like you're about to cry. I see the sadness that's behind your eyes. That little smile that you get when you're afraid. I don't know why, but it makes me sad. See you stand alone like that, as if the sea of faces could wash you away. But you try so hard to hold back the tears. You purse your lips and nod and say that you're fine. You give me that sweet little smile, and then you look away. And I'm left staring at your hair, falling down your back like water, and wishing that I knew all the reasons why. You always look like you're about to cry, about to cry. Ooh, I see the sadness in your eyes, about to cry, I wonder why. Ooh. And all I wanna do is take your hands in mine, stop you in your tracks and look into your eyes and softly say your name, brush the tears away and smile and tell you that it's okay. It's not a crime to cry sometimes.
Joshua Tasman is his name. His new CD called Jump. Celebration of the release of this CD happening Sunday, the 3rd of April. California Jazz Conservatory is the place, 2087 Addison Street in Berkeley. It's open air. I'm Kevin Vance sitting in for David Lotalip this afternoon. I want to welcome Kevin Ralston back to the KLW studio.
Thanks so much. It's Kevin, so good to be back.
So I see a picture of you with you're about to pull a neon axe out of a tree trunk, much like King Arthur pulling a sword from a stone. What's going on?
It's called
A Deal with the Dragon. Tell me about that.
It's sort of the opposite of an Excalibur moment. It's sort of our little anti-hero who's reaching in to make a very bad decision that's going to follow him throughout the rest of his life.
Oh,
so
my.
It seems like it might be pulling the axe out, but what he's doing, he's about to prick his finger in the parlance of a fairy tale language.
Is there it's a deal with the devil or something like that?
Essentially. Yes.
Oh. And without, of course, giving it away, there's what does our character go through in this?
Our young hero is trying to get out of a bargain he made when he was very, very young, and he sees a possible escape route in the form of this job, an artistic opportunity that he's preparing for and will be interviewing for very early tomorrow morning. But the gentleman with whom he is in this bargain obviously wants to prevent that from happening. So we watch these two joust and play chess with one another and make moves and defenses and all that sort of thing. It's delicious to watch.
I'm sure it is. We're talking March 25th through the 26th at ACT's Costume Shop.
It's March 25th to April 16th.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You said it right, and it was right in front of me. I just didn't say it
right.
Oh,
that's okay.
The Costume Shop. I love it. It sounds like, we can take over the Costume Shop. Nobody will know.
Exactly.
Day, right?
we're like the Muppets in that way. We just move in. We can put on a show wherever.
Deal with the Dragon. And it's this is a one-man show. This is just you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're playing all the characters.
That's right. And they are characters. We actually call it a one-man play, which is different, of course, than having a narrator who is the person who wrote it and is talking as themselves. These are characters that remain, for the most part, in scenes with one another, which is a delicious challenge that Graham and I have been unpacking and excavating for 2 years.
I often wonder about one-man shows, one-man plays. You don't direct it yourself. You have to have outside interference.
I think it would be a terrible idea to try to direct it yourself. Yeah, and Graham,
how do you do notes to yourself?
Yes, you're already swimming in your own subconscious, so notes within that would be pretty hard. And that's when I found out that when I realized that I not only needed a director, but I needed someone to develop it with me. I wanted it to be another gay theater artist like myself, and I reached out to my good friend Graham, who I had already worked with on a new adaptation of Camino Real by Tennessee Williams, and I just I've always loved his work, and we were friends. And I said, "Hey, you wanna do this with me?" And I sent him the script, and it worked out.
Do you corroborate that, Graham? Is that the sequence of events?
It's been a wonderful collaboration, and it's been a little unusual and wonderful because the first thing Kevin said is that I don't really, Kevin's primarily an actor for most of his career. This is his second play, and he said, "I don't know how to write this play at a typewriter at home. I don't know how to sit down and write this play. I need to be in a studio improvising on my feet every day, and I need someone to give me provocations and prompts so that I can begin to do it." So every day we'd meet and just kind of play around with the material and record it all, and then he'd go home and transcribe the recordings and come back with more script the next day.
Yeah, so the language is very, very dynamic. It pops off of the page because that's how it was created.
What will we see? Will there be a lot of costume changes between the characters?
No, not a single one. It's just me in some nice tight jeans and a tight T-shirt, which I think was strategic. I didn't make that decision. Yes, I did.
Gotta keep the eyes interested. Wow.
Yeah. No, it's in all seriousness. That's not what the show's about. It's about letting the audience's imagination do all of that work, and that's been the most amazing part about developing the show is having people, as we've shared it in pieces, is have people report back to us their experiences being so participatory. That's the thing about the show is a metaphor. It's a fable. And what is happening, we're told, is that people are able, because of the metaphor, to put their own backstory on what's happening. And they participate with our hero in a very active way.
And I think about also one person shows, one man plays. A lot of them are autobiographical. People are telling telling a really heart wrenching story. Is there an element? I hear an element of fiction in it, but is there an element of truth in all this? Did you have to make a deal with a devil of some sort?
I did. That's where the show came from, and the show started to be birthed. Once I realized that was what was going on with me, that I had accepted certain things. Well, you can make a deal with the dragon anytime you feel like you can't deal with your life. When fear or doubt or self-loathing or shame is clouding what's going on so bad that you feel like you have to reach for something else, that you're not good enough in and of yourself, which is another reason why people are responding to the show, because at some point or another, we all deal with that at some level.
We've all had to deal with a dragon. We've all had to say, "Well, I'll take this awful waiter job, even though it interferes with my social life and it doesn't pay me very much, but at least it gets me out of the house."
Have I waited tables on you, Kevin?
You probably did an excellent job too. I hope I tipped you generously.
That's exactly it. It's that very thing. I said I'm not good enough for that, so I have to settle for this or whatever the case may be.
Oh, that's my story too. Kevin Ralston is our guest here. He's the writer and performer of a one-man play called Deal with the Dragon, developed and directed by Graham Smith, also here in the KLW studio. Deal with the Dragon, the dates for this performance are March 25th through April 16th. I hope I said that right this time.
That's right.
Got a little dyslexic there. At the ACT's Costume Shop, and the address is 117 Market Street at 7th Street in San Francisco. And a website is dealwiththedragon.com. So we're going to be laughing, we're going to be crying, we're going to be what else? What other what other emotions should we expect to be experiencing in this show?
As you go through the show, you will be experiencing all of those things and rooting for characters and cringing at what they're saying and doing while you're rooting for them in that way can be so complex and yet utterly human. But ultimately, given some glimmer of hope, as how do you proceed as a human being in the modern complex world and be a good person?
So we're not going to walk out of it, you know, feeling like we've watched a real tragic opera and everybody dies at the end. There'll be something to look forward towards the end.
Absolutely.
This sounds really exciting because we've all, as you said, we've all gone through this. Kevin Ralston, our guest here and on Open Air here on KALW. In addition to your acting work, you're a mentor for playwrights, do I understand that?
That's right.
I'd love to hear about that too.
Sure, that's where this began actually. As I began, I was getting a little, I don't want to say bored, but I will. I was getting a little bored with my acting career just by itself. And I wanted to think about writing, and I found this amazing organization called Each One, Reach One, which brings playwriting mentors into the Juvenile Justice Center of San Francisco and San Mateo, and you teach in metaphor. The young writers in the juvenile justice system must write in metaphor. So if they want to write about drugs, if they want to write about guns, it has to be filtered and worked out in another way. And it was during that work that I was like, I can write a play. Anybody can write a play. And so I not only I taught what I needed to learn first, and I think it was all the more mine because of that.
Boy, I can imagine you're making a lot of lights go off in a lot of young people's heads and going, wow, I didn't know I had this in me. Is that the reward you get from that kind of work?
It is, and when it's happening right in front of your eyes, when you see their lights, the light in their eyes just go off. Because also at ACT, I was a teaching theater artist with a lot of young people from downtown high school here in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And we would have them writing their own pieces, doing Shakespeare. And I remember this one student I had who was playing Hamlet, and we were working in rehearsal. And I thought he was about to close down because he was getting too many notes. And just at that moment, when he could have made a deal with the dragon instead, he pushed through, breathed, and he just completely came into his body and power and just owned who he was in the role of Hamlet. And when that happens in front of your eyes, it is one of the most powerful things you can see.
The reward, really even more powerful than the applause.
Absolutely.
Kevin Ralston, our guest here. Deal with the Dragon is the name of the show, the one-man play. It runs from the 25th of March through the 16th of April. It takes place at ACT's Costume Shop, 1117 Market Street at 7th here in San Francisco. DealWithTheDragon.com is the website. Kevin, I'm really excited about this show. Thanks for turning me on to this.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about Shakespeare and the Tenderloin next here on Open Air.
The path you tread is narrow, and the drop is sheer and very high. The ravens all are watching from a vantage point nearby. Apprehension creeping like a tube train up your spine. Will the tightrope reach the end? Will a final couplet rhyme? And it's high time. Nowhere you can hide. Your manager and agent are both busy on the phone, selling colored photographs to magazines back home. And it's high time. Symbolize.
lines converging where you stand. They must have moved the picture plane. The leaves are heavy around your feet. You hear the thunder of the train. Suddenly it strikes you that they're moving into range. And Doctor Strange is always changing sides.
Pink Floyd had that song called Cymbeline. Reminds me of a Shakespeare play.
It does.
Glenn Havlin is here in the KLW studio here on Open Air, and I understand you're working on a project to bring this Shakespeare, is it a romantic comedy?
It is. It's one of the later plays. Late in Shakespeare's life, he stopped writing these giant tragedies centered on a Titanic central figure, and he stopped writing comedies about courtship and wedding, and I think he stopped writing histories and didn't want to be in any particular mode and just wrote great plays. This is from the same time that we get The Winter's Tale and The Tempest and plays that don't really fit the usual categories.
And the other interesting thing about this play is, it's rarely done, but you're also doing this in the Tenderloin. And, well, there are great theaters that just happen to be in the Tenderloin or next door to it, but you're in the Tenderloin.
Yeah, we certainly are on Golden Gate Avenue and Leavenworth Street in the old YMCA building. There's a beautiful, beautiful Edwardian auditorium in there. There is actually a lot of theater in the Tenderloin right now, and not just a lot of theater, but a lot of accessible and affordable theater going on at a lot of venues. I think theater's been forced into the lower rent neighborhoods in some way, but I also think that being central and being convenient to public transportation and being relatively affordable makes us all, a lot more of a public asset.
So what will we see when we go to this theater on it's Golden Gate Avenue, and we're going to see a performance of Cymbeline of the great William Shakespeare play. But it's taking place in the Tenderloin. What is unusual about? Will this be a period piece?
Well, we're going to set it basically in the actual time that Shakespeare set it, which was ancient Roman Britain, the time of Octavius Caesar. But we're giving it a nice sparkle of fairy tale. Everybody who's attracted to this play sees that fairy tale element in it, that princess who has married the wrong guy and he's exiled and she runs away from home and finds him, and the two of them embark on this strange loop that brings them back to where they were, but different people, changed, more mature and more able to be together and justify their relationship and be members of their society, which they were outcasts from previously.
The performance of Cymbeline, William Shakespeare's Cymbeline, directed by our guest here, Glenn Havlin. It's put on by the company of the Theater of Others, and the dates for that, the 25th of March through the 10th of April, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 o'clock. And it all takes place at Kelly Cullen Community Auditorium. That's 220 Golden Gate Avenue here in San Francisco, just a couple of blocks north of the Civic Center BART station. Tell me about the Theater of Others.
Theater of Others is a collective of Shakespeare nuts, essentially. Mm. A merry band of Bartolaters. And our whole approach is to make it really clear
about what we're talking about the text. We're all about the text, even though this particular show is a huge production of lights and costumes and sound and scenery. This is a full-on production, even though we are presenting it with a pay-what-you-will admission for all performances. We are still putting on the whole megillah. We've got the play, we've got the costume, scenery, all production values at a very, very high level. But what we want to do is remedy the situation in America where there is a lot of bad Shakespeare. There are a lot of people who don't like Shakespeare, but there are a lot of people who haven't seen it done well. I'm not saying that we're doing it at the highest level, but we're doing it with a concentration on the text and our meanings and our understanding of how we're communicating it. And I think that is the difference. When people say, oh, you know, the British do Shakespeare better, well, they do it better, but they do it because they start with the words. They start with the text, they start with the verse, and they have techniques that will allow them to really examine the play and find where those operative words are. They make sure that you hear the words you need to hear instead of just letting it flow like, you know, some kind of avalanche over you.
I want to ask you about that pay what you will moment there, because that's particularly interesting. But I just made me think, you're hoping that your audience is not just your regular San Francisco theater goers, but also folks in the neighborhood.
It is. And it's also part of our deal with the owners of the building, which it is the former YMCA, but it's now owned by the Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation. And they are a company with a very right-on mission of low-income housing in the Tenderloin. Usually they own apartment buildings, SROs, hotels, and that sort of thing. So when they came into this building, which had facilities that their other properties don't have, they saw the opportunity to have a community space that is a beautiful auditorium. I don't bother to tell people how nice it is, because it's even nicer than that. And they have gone into partnership with us as a kind of producing agency that books the auditorium, that does our own shows in there. And part of the understanding with them and part of their mission is maximum community access. So conventional commercial theatrical production can't really succeed in there, because they'd be selling tickets and that would keeping people out. What I'm hoping is that on average, from donations from people, we'll do pretty much the same. It's a question of whether you want to have a lot of people paying a little or a few people paying a lot. To me, that's no choice at all.
The production of Cymbeline, put on by Theater of Others, directed by our guest Glenn Havlin. William Shakespeare's romantic comedy, not done very often, but...
Well, there are reasons.
There are other reasons?
Oh, there are reasons why it's not done. It's pretty long. I've cut it by 20%, and it's still probably a little more than an average length of a Shakespeare play. It's a very complicated plot. There are a lot of characters. It's been very difficult to make a rehearsal schedule, because all these different characters have little scenes here, little scenes there, all these different combinations of the characters, the way they go through. But once you've gone through it and you realize the journey you've made with these characters, it makes sense. They had to go through those iterations. They had to go through those combinations in order to get to where they are at the end.
Cymbeline, being performed at the Kelly Cullen Community Auditorium. The dates are the 25th of March through the 10th of April. That's Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. And on Thursday the 31st and April the 7th, there is a pay what you will for those performances. Tell me about that. So that really jumped out.
Well, that's
out
a
at
we
me.
Pay you Thursday.
Really?
Yeah, we pay you. We will pay you $1 cash American to come see this show.
That's like a deal. Wow.
Well, I don't know how you do
see,
a whole lot better
pay
than that.
Me to see
I was trying to think of some way. How do you do better? How do you make some kind of special offer on what is already a free show, if you want it to be a free show? You know, when it's all said and done, what we want is to have a lot of people come and see our work and appreciate what we're doing and enjoy it and see what we have to interpret with this timeless text. So eventually, when we look back at this years from now, and I've been doing this for a long time, and when I think back to one of the more successful productions that I've put on, the things that stand out to me are how many people came to see it, how many people enjoyed it. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of theater out there that I just don't go to. You know, I've got a wife and a son, and if we're going to go to a show that costs us $35 and I'm going to spend, what, over $100 for tickets, and I'm going to drive there and I'm going to park, and, you know, I'm going to think twice, and usually that second time I'm going to say no because it's really – it gets to be kind of onerous. Now, I know people are trying to make a business of this, but that's the difference here. We're not a business. We have no intention of – you know how to make a small fortune in the theater, right?
You
start with a large fortune. That's okay. So, yeah, right. You know, you're going to take a bath no matter what, mm-hmm. All right? The other thing is that what we're trying to do is be a little freer than most of the whole development direction angle, which, you know, essentially is crawling on your knees to wealthy people. And if you're a big organization like Berkeley Rep and ACT, you're just begging from wealthier people. You know, that's kind of how it works. So we have some grant sources, and we do get some friendly donations, and we want to keep it to that. We want to be the theater that the community deserves.
This sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, so the $1 Thursday thing, part of it is because we haven't done Thursdays before. We've been performing on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so the Thursdays are a bit of an experiment anyway. So I thought, how do you juice it up, you know? I mean, there are, like, TBA has this thing like, you know, they have this, like, free night of theater where you're supposed to set aside one night for free. And I keep going to them saying, but all our nights are free if you want them to be. So how do we get this kind of attention? How do we get some publicity for doing something special? All we can do special at that point is pay you. So, yes, $1 cash American George Washington to everybody who comes to see the show. And that's the only way we can do better.
Specifically on the dates of Thursday the 31st and the 7th of April, the Thursday evening performances at 8 p.m. of Cymbeline. One of Shakespeare's great romantic comedies sounds even more complicated than *Midsummer's Night's Dream*.
It is.
Follow.
Well, they will, and that's our whole goal: is to be able to present these plays and present the ones that aren't done well. What we're trying to do also is get a reputation of being the company that does the plays that aren't done often. We've done *Measure for Measure*. We're planning to do *King John* in the fall. And then when we do the ones that are more often performed, we did Taming of the Shrew. We're going to do Much Ado About Nothing, which will open in July. Those will be done in less conventional ways. And I don't necessarily mean like high concept crazy ways, you know, setting them on Mars and stuff like that. But, you know, doing things with the characters and playing with gender, particularly with Much Ado, and presenting them in ways that make people think of them differently. So there are people who want to see every Shakespeare play. I want to be in every Shakespeare play. I've been in 19 different Shakespeare plays, not counting the ones that I've been in more than once. And that's not bad. It's about halfway there. But there are people who want to see every Shakespeare play. It's like bird watchers with a life list. You know, they want to go out and see everything. And they don't get an opportunity for this kind of thing. So I'm hoping they'll come out of the woodwork. Even though it's been done a little bit, I was actually in it last summer at Marin Shakespeare Company, which is a group I work with regularly. I'll be back there again in Othello this August and September. It's a play that's not done often. It's a play that needs to be treated. Also, we have a bit of an element of surprise. If you do Romeo and Juliet, everybody knows how it ends.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would love to do Romeo and Juliet for a crowd of people who had no idea what was going to happen. They would be shocked. I mean, we almost can't put that in our minds of what it would be like to watch that play without knowing what's going to happen. But here is a play where I think a lot of people won't know what's going to happen. And Romeo and Juliet can appear to be a lovely romance in which everybody gets back together and has a great time and parties at the end, and the lovers are reunited. It should look like that. Nobody can make it look like that because you know what's going to happen. Cymbeline has a kind of almost opposite feel. It comes off as a really dark tragedy. What we're doing it as a dark blue fairy tale, and there are three awful villains in it. There is Imogen, who is probably the greatest female character in Shakespeare. Too noble to know she's noble, somebody said about her. And it's got great characters. It's a great story, and I think the reason it's not done much is because it's complicated and because it's difficult and because it's not one of those like Twelfth Night or the others, which, you know, of course, I love those too. Twelfth Night or As You Like It. I've been at As You Like It four times.
I want to say, Glenn, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to this performance. This is Cymbeline, put on by Theater of Others, March 25th through the 10th of April, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., taking place at the Kelly Cullen Community Auditorium, 220 Golden Gate Avenue, San Francisco. Do you have a website?
We do. We're at to-sf.org. That's the, you know, hyphen, to-sf.org.
Glenn, thank you so much. Looking forward to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Nice to be here.
Happy birthday, Aretha Franklin. And stay tuned. And Peter Robinson, our critic at large, has some great stories to tell.
You better think about what you're saying. You better think about the consequences of your actions.
Oh, shut up, woman.
You better think about what you're trying to do to me. Yeah, think. Let your mind go, let yourself be free. Let's go back, let's go back, let's go away.
Peter Robinson, our critic at large. I already have the Bridge from the River Kwai running through my head.
Okay,
one of those great movies, one of those great theme songs.
Yeah, and of course the whistling I think emphasizes that these are prisoners in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. It's a David Lean movie made in 1957, and the British commander, of course, is no less than Alec Guinness. Now, I mentioned this because this evening at the Sausalito Library, we are paying a special tribute to filmmaker Sir David Lean. He died 25 years ago in April 1991, and we're going to be looking at clips from some of his great epic films. Of course, with the bridge over on the River Kwai, I always smile because it was an expensive movie, but one reason was, as the train comes roaring over the bridge, it gets blown up. But that's not the end of the story. The cameraman on duty that day came up with those immortal words, "There was a hare in the gate." So indeed, the train went into the water, the bridge disappeared, but no, David Lean had to reshoot it a second time. Anyhow, I don't want to ruin the ending for people who really may have missed this great movie, Bridge on the River Kwai, but let me say a couple of words about some of his other epic movies. Perhaps one of the more famous is Lawrence of Arabia, which of course, again, is a widescreen landscape movie starring Peter O'Toole. In fact, they said about him, if he was any prettier, they would call it Florence of Arabia. But he indeed is the center story. Lawrence, a very controversial character. And I think, interestingly enough, after the film finishes with this classic scene in Damascus, Syria in 1919 became the state that we would gradually grow to know it. And what we realize today is holding different clans, different tribes, different groups of people together just under a geographic boundary doesn't necessarily work. So there's a kind of forward-looking approach to this great David Lean epic. And, of course, his other classic is Passage to India. And that, of course, is the end of the British Raj. Alec Guinness was a favorite actor for David Lean, but great actors liked to work in his pictures. He was very much a perfectionist. He demanded only the best, and indeed he often got it. So A Passage to India will be another one that we'll be running clips from. And then a slightly lesser known one, but another widescreen movie, was Ryan's Daughter. It's set on that beautiful west coast of Ireland. It stars Robert Mitchum, John Mills, Sarah Miles, a great love story, and in many ways a photographic film because of the setting. In fact, almost the acting is overtaken by those long-lasting shots. Now, it's easy to forget with David Lean that, of course, he wasn't just making movies in the 1950s and 60s. We go back to the 1940s, and, of course, he is the person who gave us Brief Encounter. And that, to me, is one of the great classic train films. It has Rachmaninoff's No. 2 Piano Concerto playing in the background. And, of course, you've got Celia Johnson and Trevor Howard having that little illicit kiss on the platform at a railway station. And so the story goes on. And then he moved into other wartime movies in which we serve, a great Noel Coward picture, One of Our Aircraft is Missing, and Sound Barrier, the story about a Neville Shute novel which first broke the sound barrier. But just to finish this episode on David Lean, I cannot resist not playing Lara's theme, which, of course, is Dr. Zhivago, another train movie set in Moscow, filmed, actually, for the most part in Spain and also in Norway, and, of course, starring, guess who? Julie Christie. Julie Christie smiles away, and here's the music. Now you recognize it, that great haunting melody as the train races across the snowbound caps of Russia. And of course, Julie Christie to smile us out. Now for something totally different, I want to speak about a play which opens next month at the Marin Theatre Company. I saw it in London where it opened last year. It's by the distinguished playwright Howard Brenton, and it is called Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn, of course, is the mistress first of Henry VIII. She is his second wife, and she has been a character that has intrigued both playwrights and novelists. Many people may remember Hilary Mantel's book, Vile Bodies. It was also turned into a fine masterpiece theatre series about Thomas Cromwell. So this particular play focuses on the affair and then the marriage between Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. And we're looking at Europe here in the 16th century, a great period of turmoil, of religious upheaval, economic changes, constitutional alterations to a constitution, and of course an age where, this is the magic word, dynasty, or as we say it over here, dynasty, is really important. What Henry needed and what Henry didn't have was a male heir to keep the Tudor dynasty alive. He'd been married to Catherine of Aragon, a Spanish queen, and already had been floating his eye around. In fact, he had an affair with Anne Boleyn's sister before meeting her. So in comes Anne Boleyn. Out goes the Pope after a dispute between Henry and the church. And the new Archbishop, Thomas Cranmer, finally, with the help of Parliament, not only gives Henry the divorce, but makes him supreme head of the church in England. Now, that's the background to the story. What about Anne Boleyn herself? Well, there are some facts known, but not a great deal. Was she an adulteress? Did she have endless affairs? Or was she an innocent? Did she suffer simply because Henry had tired of her? Anyway, one way or the other, by 1536, she ends up on the scaffold and is executed. Now, the interesting thing about Hal Brenton's play is that it does not finish with the execution of Anne Boleyn. In fact, it fast forwards 70 years to the next reign, James I of England, James VI of Scotland. And there we see the impact of the religious revolution. James would give us the famous version of the Bible. In between, we have, of course, the great development of the English language under William Shakespeare. And above all, we see a change in dynasties from the Tudors to the Stuarts. So here is an intriguing play, having its first American premiere, opening on April the 14th at the Marin Theatre Company. And it's what I call one of the real housewives of Tudor England, no less than the short-lived but excitingly lived-out Anne Boleyn, something I wouldn't miss and something I would highly recommend. And finally, I'd like to go back to the story of libraries again, because last week I was part of a small group that celebrated the 20th anniversary of the main library here in San Francisco. And I think a great library in a city reflects on great readers. Here are some of the key facts. They have over 3 million books on those shelves there. If you include e-books, we're talking about 280,000. And of those, over 10 million are checked out each year. When I looked at some of the top reading choices for last year, I had only read two of them. One was All the Light We Cannot See, a great story set in World War II, and then something which later became a movie called Gone Girl. But libraries are not just a place for books. They have other endless activities. The story time, and they literally say we go from the cradle to the grave, because they have a terminal care series of talks. If you want to go out with a book, and even something about green burials. On top of that, there are over 12,000 programs each month for all ages, and this includes excellent movie evenings, computer classes, phonographic record series, and, yes, video games. And out of this library, they manage 27 different branches across the city. So if you're a book lover, and if you want to get a question answered, don't forget, call the reference desk there at San Francisco Main Library. And I think, as Mark Twain said, a man who does not read has no advantage over the man who cannot read. Welcome to the San Francisco Main Library.
Peter, thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for your participation in today's open air. Again, that event is tonight, the celebration of David Lean, the movie evening and talk, at 6:45 tonight at the Sausalito Library. Admission is free. Telephone number for more information is 415-381-6671. The program is Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of things around the Bay Area, things artistic. David LaTulipe, usually your host, Kevin Vance sitting in this afternoon. Many thank you to Neil Swinkles for basically doing all the dirty work. And thank you for your support and your attention. Alt Latino coming up at 11 o'clock tonight, and coming up in just about a minute's time, it's the BBC News Hour.